Welcome to Saints History, told and experienced the way God intended it, with excessive amounts of alcohol and cursing. The booze is probably bourbon because...
Other alcohols are for rich women on diets.
Now, here's your drunk Saints History host, who is...
bombed out of his gourd.
If you call me Chris Everett to my face one more time...
I already did it twice.
You better... No, one more time, we better take a station break.
Well, it's a five-minute segment. A five-segment show.
We got a long way to go.
We do.
We got a long way to go.
We do.
I'll get a couple segments out of
you. It's good to be here with you, though.
Well, it's good to see you, too.
We've been talking like this behind my back for a long time.
But now I said it right here.
Right, exactly.
Well, we got no problem with that.
I think that you probably won't say it again.
That I do.
Okay.
Chris?
All right, you people, you donated for the drunk history, and we love you for it. And I got a special guest. I got, you know, we do it with Andrew and we do it with Dave and Kevin, but I got to get special guests on the internet. My guy, Preston Ellis of the Bird Rights, go there, people. The Pelicans, they're you're gonna hear this in May, so they may be eliminated in playoffs, but they probably won't be. They'll probably be on like Game 5-6 versus Golden State, Preston. Right when the people hear this, like that's when it'll be.
Before we start talking about the Pelicans, I just want to say thank you to you guys. I listen to you guys every single week on my way to work, and you guys tickle me fucking pink. I think you guys, like, not only do such a great job of, like, capturing what it's like to be a New Orleans Saints fan, you guys are just downright entertaining, and you make me laugh, and you talk about sports in a way that really makes it fun. Like, so many times we have to, like, stop ourselves from, like, being down in the dumps and being negative and just, like, criticizing.
No, sports is not serious. Sports is fucking fun. I don't like, they got serious stuff in the world. They got Syria problems and political problems. Like, sports isn't, it's fun. It's supposed to be fun. And if it's not fun, you're not doing it. And that's why we do drunk history, because people said, hey, y'all need to talk about Saints history. I don't know it. They got a lot of new fans post Katrina. And that's why I picked you, because you're like about my age and you diehard. And me and Preston, we'll be honest, we were talking about like, what can we do that's like the most random fucking drunk Saints history ever? So, and Preston's like, let's do Jim Everett. And I was like, fucking, we're there. So that's what we're doing. We're doing the Jim Everett years. And probably people are gonna be like, oh, I don't care. But you're gonna love it if you listen. Like, okay, so the Saints had their Dome Patrol. And they were awesome in Jim Moore years, and the defense was phenomenal. And then they got rid of Bobby Hebert, and they got Wade Wilson, and they went down to 8-8. And then starting in 94, the Saints, like, they signed Michael Haynes from Atlanta, and they traded for Jim Everett. And at the time, Preston, but you remember, people were like, what the fuck are they doing? Why would the Rams give the Saints Jim Everett? They're in the same division. This is the 90s, right? It was the Rams, the Saints, Atlanta, and San Francisco in the NFC West. And Saints fans were like, they traded for Chris Everett. He's in the division. If the Rams thought he was any good, they wouldn't trade him to the Saints. And so people were down on him. But as they heard the audio to begin this podcast, Preston, people started to get excited about Jim Everett when he went on the Jim Rome show, which was like on ESPN2 at the time, probably at like midnight. And Jim Rome had like invented the Chris Everett nickname, apparently. And Jim Everett was mad. And he went on there and he was like, don't call me Chris. Don't call me Chris. And then he fucking went at Rome. And it was awesome. And it turned people kind of pro Jim Everett, right? Like, I'll admit, like, I got kind of pumped. I was like, Jim Everett, man, showing some balls, taking it to Jim Rome.
First of all, I have to say that my cocktail is delicious right now. And
I'm drinking Jack and Coke.
Very nice. So before we, like, preface Jim Everett and what it took to get him to New Orleans, we first have to, like, educate the guys who might not have been watching football in 1991, 92 about Carl Smith and about the lack of any passing attack that had ever taken place. And with that being said, the defense is out of town. Wade Wilson comes to the Saints in 1993, and Bobby Hebert responds in Atlanta by having a Pro Bowl-type season. He throws for more touchdowns than he's ever had. So New Orleans is pissed. They're like, what the hell, Jim Finks? All of a sudden, we cut Bobby Hebert loose, and now we instead of blaming Bobby Hebert for like shit in the bed for years and years and years, now we point to Carl Smith and we say, you didn't take advantage of Bobby Hebert's strengths. And
Bobby Hebert, his 93 season, by the way, that's the best season of his career, is 24 touchdowns and 17 picks and a 4% interception rate and 61% completion, which was the highest he'd ever had. Oh, no, he'd been a little bit better for the Saints, but like it wasn't like Bobby Hebert in 93, like it wasn't that great. Like it was still kind of
Dude, you know? I was 10 years old, and I went to the Georgia Dome for my first ever game in a neighboring arena. And, of course, it was our hated rivals. This is just like 2 or 3 years after the 1991 Deion Sanders game. And that 98, I have never seen anything like a 98-yard touchdown pass in my life. And it broke me. And as he, like, caught it and started streaking down, I thought that my heart was just going to leap out of my chest and explode. I was so heartbroken watching.
And then he does the wings.
Oh, man.
It's just fucking awful. And the thing is, the 93 Saints, the thing that made it worse is they started 5-0, and then they went in the spiral. So that's a good preface. So, like, the Saints, like, 93, it crashed and burned. And their defense just was completely – it like, their defense fell apart way – which is people don't realize that their defense fell apart way faster than their offense did. Their offense had always been kind of mediocre. And if you go back and look at it, like, it's not that bad. It's like 10 to 20. Their third down is not as bad as you remember. Cause back then all you had to go on the Saints, right, Preston, you read the paper, you listened to Buddy D, and that's how you got your Saints news. And that influenced your opinion. You couldn't, like, dig up stats and say, well, they're not bad at running, they're this or that. Like, now you can argue with people, and you have, like, it was hard to get fucking stats in the NFL. You know, it wasn't like you just go to Google and type it in, you know?
No, you had, like, Robert Pig Goff. You had Joe Johnson in his rookie year. Wayne Martin got hurt that year. Then you have Joel Smeans. I can't even remember how to say his name because he was always hurt. You've got Sam Mills, who was just, like, 1 or 2 years away from going to San Francisco and Carolina, excuse me. You've got Winfred Tubbs, who's a third-round pick. You've got Ronaldo Turnbull, who is now, like, 1 year past, like, his best season in New Orleans. After that, you've got, like, Carl Lee, Tyrone Leggett. You've got Vince Buck.
Oh, fucking Carl Lee. I forgot about him. And some bad corners, man.
Chris, or excuse me, Jim Everett at this point in 1993, he was hurt. He had like 8 touchdown passes, 12 interceptions. So you know, the Rams think that he's washed up. We get him for a 7th round pick. And now we're coming in and we're like, screw the Dome Patrol, dude. We're going to be the fastest show on turf. We're going to be the run and gun offense that the Atlanta Falcons were known for with like Jim Miller and stuff. We're going to blow the roof off this place. We're just going to pass. And I think he did get 4,000 yards passing. Anyway, I'm jumping the gun. Let's go back to Jim Rome. And I have to ask you, man, because this has been like gossip rumor mill ever since like 1994, is that so we've got some quotes from Skipper Walsh, like from ESPN. And he says he went too far, but we don't think this represents the body of work that Jim has done up for, you know, 140 shows or whatever. And they obviously like had this conversation about it beforehand. Jim said to us, that's fair. Let's do it. It's not malicious. It's all in good fun. It's going to be verbal jousting. Let's do it. But then Jim gets on the show and loses his fucking shit within 30 seconds. Like, you can't say that this wasn't calculated. Do you think this was a setup, or do you think like Jim just like weaseled his way into the studio so that he could like body slam Jim Rome?
I think what happened as the clip we played at the beginning, I watched it. It's so great. I think what happened was Jim Everett expected him to call him Chris and then be like, okay, you call me Chris. I met you face to face. Now you can say it to my face. You said it to my face. Okay, let's move it along and go to the interview. And it got antagonistic like really quick. And Rome like could have it. Suddenly he got in the corner where like Jim Everett was like, you can't do it again. So Jim Rome was like, I got to do it again. I can't like Jim Rome's whole thing is like, he's an asshole and he doesn't back down and he treats his guests and his callers like shit. Like that's his radio. It's his whole shtick. So like Jim Everett kind of put him in a corner that I don't think they were either of them thought they would get there. And it just kind of got there. I think maybe Jim Everett thought that he would like call him Chris a couple times and move it along, and it didn't happen. And he dumped him over the table, and he's like, and you see the video, he's like leaning over him, and dude, it like turned the Jim Everett trade. Like people were calling into Buddy D, they were pumped about it. They're like, fucking hey, man, Jim Everett's not taking any shit. He's making a comeback. The thing was though, he was only 30, which we think of it now, but like 30 for a quarterback was old in 93, 94, you know? But the interesting thing about that Saints team was they had Michael Haynes, they had Quinn Early, they had
don't forget Torrance Small.
You know? Yeah, they had Torrance Small. They had Wesley Walls, who they got. He was a beat-up guy. He would catch 38 and 50 and then go to Carolina. That was the problem with the Saints. They didn't know how to do free agency. They weren't proactive, and he would leave. But those 93 team, man, that team, they still scored about the same. You know, the 93 team and the 92 team, they were 9-10 in offense and points scored. The Saints were ninth, but their defense just went off a cliff. But the thing was, like, if you look at Jim Everett, man, like, this is going to have people just – they're going to lose their fucking minds, Preston, but I'm just going to say it. Jim Everett's 2 years at quarterback for the Saints, his two good years, are the best Saints quarterback years before Aaron Brooks and Drew Brees, and it's not even really fucking close.
Dude, like, check this out. Like, in his three seasons, really two and a half seasons, because, of course, that interim year with Jim Mora at 96.
Yeah.
He was already the third most prolific passer in New Orleans Saints history in 2.5 years.
2.5 years?
2.5 years.
2.5 years. Like, all it took was a 38 and a 39. Like, basically, he had 4,000 yards and 3,900 yards. That's all it took to get him.
3,900 yards and 4,000 yards in 1995. That's a pretty damn good stat line, even in today's NFL.
The thing is, the 95 team, though, they were fucking terrible on defense. A lot of those yards he was chasing because they were bad. Like, that defense, like, their defense just, like, that's the thing in football, man. You can kind of see it in Seattle. Like, you get old and you're just like, boom, they're just like, what happened? Our defense was number one, and now we can't stop the run, and it's done. But
I don't want to be insensitive, but I remember Jim Finks, like, passed away, and I want to say it was sometime in the summer of 1994, and Bill Kuharik, like, wasn't promoted to general manager. He had some kind of, like, I don't know, mysterious role. Like,
no, they did the three headed buddy. He used to call it the. I'm burping. Buddy D used to call it the good ship lollipop. It was Kuharik, Mora, and Jim Miller. And Buddy D asked him, he's like, Jim Mora, he's like, well, Kuharik's the general manager. Do you answer to him? Jim Mora's like, no. Buddy D's like, well, who do you answer to? He's like, I'm the owner, Tom mentioned. But he's like, well, the three of y'all are all equal power. And Jim Mora was like, kinda, but Jim Mora really kind of ran it. And it just, like, it didn't work. The thing was, like, with the 94, 95, 96 Saints, like, free agency was just starting, and the Saints just fucking didn't know what to do it. They just didn't know how to run it. They weren't proactive. They didn't have a plan. They were always like, oh shit, this player left, let's go. So, like, it was always like the Saints were always in a panic scramble mode in free agency. Like, that's the thing that fans don't realize now, like with Mickey Loomis and all, like, you know, the Saints, they have a plan. They're like, okay, we're going to try to get Jimmy Graham. Oh, it didn't work out with Jimmy Graham. We're going to spend the money here. And they always have, like, a backup plan, you know, with their, like, last year they tried to get Zietler, right, at guard. Didn't work out. So they get Warford, like, 20 minutes later, right? They're always on it. Like, the Saints and Carrick were never fucking on it. And, you know, the fun thing was, though, with the Jim Everett team present, they threw the ball all over the place. Like, he threw it 540 times, 567 times. Like, they couldn't run the ball and they were always behind. But it was fun. Like, it was a fun. Like, they weren't necessarily winning, but it was fun. And it felt a lot better than with the Dome Patrol offenses. Like you said, it felt like it was more exciting and fun.
Yeah, they definitely had a lot of weapons, and that was, like, sexy. I remember 94. This is the only game from the Jim Everett era that I really remember was when Torrance Small had, like, 170-something yards and, like, three touchdowns, and we ended up winning 30-28. That was exciting football, but partially, like, and you can help me with this. I can't remember if it was 94 or 95. I think it was 94, but the Saints had to pass the ball so much because Lorenzo Neal fucking broke Mario Bates' jaw. Do you remember that?
Oh, I forgot about that. I think, oh, is that 90? Is that,
I can't remember.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because I think that is because Mario Bates only played 11 games. That was the year.
I can't remember which year it was. I just remember Lorenzo Neal.
I forgot. Preston, you have a better memory. I forgot about that. Lorenzo Neal fucking broke Mario Bates' jaw.
I'm Googling it right now, and the first thing I find is like Lorenzo Neal just saying, "Hey, I lost my cool. We had words. I threw a punch. There's nothing to discuss." What do you mean there's nothing to discuss? You just like crippled our running game for 2 months.
Can you imagine that today? If the Saints were like, John Kuhn broke Kamara's face.
Oh my God.
We'd be
pitchforks.
We'd be like, John Kuhn, get your fucking ass out of town. Well, they're not bringing back John Kuhn, but I'm just using his name because I can't think of the fullback that the Saints just signed. But they'd be like, pack up your shit and get out of town because we're going to murder you. You know, but Mario Bates like wasn't Zach Lyon is the voice.
We didn't know because he was I think he was the second round pick that year. So there was a lot of expectations. Vaughn Dunbar was gone. Of course, Dalton Hilliard was gone. So we had a lot of faith in this Mario second round pick. I looked it up. He was from somewhere in Arizona, broke his jaw. So for 2 months, we just don't have a running back. I think Lorenzo Neal took the bulk of the carries. This like 250 pound bowling ball is now our primary scat back.
And he was coming off a hideous broken leg. So he couldn't run. They had Derek Brown, who started out like a house of fire the year before but ended up not being any good. Like, yeah,
it was tough times, dude. It was tough times. And in addition to that, like there was that one game, but he was really impressive that year. And they didn't start off as badly as in 95 was like kind of the dumpster fire, but they're 0-2. They win a game against Tampa, a low scoring game. All of a sudden they're like at 2-3. We have some optimism, and then we go into the bye and it's just like 3-6 or something. And then we're at that point like, oh man, the dynasty is like truly done. And then people start asking like questions like, this isn't like a Jim Mora type team. Now all of a sudden we're slinging it. We're throwing the ball for 4,000 yards a game. And we've got Jimmy Spencer playing free safety. We've got Bill Kuharik and this three-headed monster of Jim Miller and Ian Jim Mora. And the writing is kind of on the wall. And it's like, we trace it back to Wade Wilson and Bobby Aber as to like, how did we get here and how did we end up? You've got Bill Kuharik like kind of like stepping into the light and saying like, defense doesn't get us anywhere. So we need to come out and pass. And now it's just all falling apart. And you can kind of see at that point in time where like, the game just kind of like passed like the USFL Jim Mora by.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. And also, too, like they were really bad and they finished up. They played like really shitty teams to end to kind of like, because they were 4-8 and they rallied up and went like 3-1 and finished 7-9. And, you know, the only good team they played there was Dallas on a Monday night. It was rocking. It was close, but they lost. But there was still, I mean, like, you didn't feel like it was really over until, 96, really.
Yeah.
But 95, man, 95, that team, they started out 0-5, but they fucking rallied back and got to like 6-7, went to Atlanta and just lost a fucking heartbreaker where Morton Anderson kicked like 4 50-yard field goals to just like fucking stick the knife in them, right? But the thing was, like, Jim Everett in that he was so good that second year. I mean, 68% completion, 26 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. Like, that's the best Saints quarterback season ever up to that point. Like, Archie never put up anywhere near as good a numbers, you know? And it wasn't like they couldn't run. And he was throwing it. He threw it 3,570 times. Like, you know?
Yes. 61% and 64% in back-to-back seasons. That was by far the best season any Saints quarterback had in that point in time. Let me tell you this, Ralph, because this is something that I just looked up. So Jim Everett at his university, he held the record for most passing yards in a season by any Boilermaker Purdue quarterback. Guess who broke Jim Everett's motherfucking record?
Gotta be Breeze, right? Gotta be Breeze.
Isn't that incredible? But like Jim Everett is still like in the history books, he's 14th in passing. He's 15th in completions. Of course, he has like that record from, I think it was like 87 against the Saints where he threw for like, of course, like Bill Kuharik goes out and gets Wade Wilson, who like crushed the Saints in their first playoff game. And then he goes out and gets Jim Everett, who threw for 336 games to Flipper Anderson. But like, I think like, can you imagine like if Jim Everett, like his 6'5" frame and his arm, like, are things any different if he's like piloting the 12-4 Saints in 1992?
Oh, well, the thing is though, the 92 team, they didn't have Wesley Walls at tight end. They had Quinn Early, You know, they didn't. It would. I think it would have been.
Say that about Hobie Brenner.
I think they would have been. I think it would have been better because I am a Bob, and we're gonna do a drunk history on Bobby Hebert at another time with maybe Andrew. But I'm a Bobby Hebert hater. I think Bobby Hebert is fucking terrible. I think he's the most overrated player in Saints history. I think he was a replacement level quarterback, never any better. He threw a ton of picks on a team that desperately needed a quarterback not to throw picks.
Don't say that, you know? Where Steve Walsh can hear you.
I think Bobby Hebert is like, he's not even as good as Bortles for Jacksonville. If the 91-92 Saints existed today, we'd be like, get rid of Hebert. Get rid of him, get rid of him, get rid of him. Because the advanced stats people, all of it would be like, he's terrible. He's replacement level. Get us a quarterback. You know? Whereas back in then, we're like, well, he's pretty good. He's local and this and that. But the thing is, that was fun about Jim Everett is two things I remember about him is like, he had a game where I want to say it was the Rams in 95 where like Jim Everett was kind of getting fed up with the offense. Like it was kind of struggling and it was, they had lost two in a row and they lost to the Raiders and they lost to San Francisco and they only scored 19-40. And he like basically called out Carl Smith and they played the Rams and, you know, he wants to stick it to the Rams. And I want to look at, I'm looking at his box score because he was just freaking amazing in that game, Preston.
Yeah, he was sacked five times, but he had a great stat line. It was 60%. It was like something like 24 or 40. Like they came out and they slung the ball all game long. And I definitely want to bring that up because that reminds me of something. The reason that Jim Rome called him Chris Everett was because I want to say it was 89. It was something in the playoffs against the 49ers. It was kind of like that Brett Favre, Michael Strahan sack where Jim Everett had been repeatedly hit so many times that one time he dropped back to pass and he just fell down because he thought that somebody was bearing over him. And you just have to like wonder like all the punishments and the beatings that he took in that season, like and then he ends up in New Orleans. But in that game against the Rams, five sacks. So like he was, I think he lost like 36 yards. I've got it in front of me now, 247 passing yards, which like at that point in time is only like 6 yards per pass, which isn't very good. But like these guys were relying on him. You look at the stat lines all the way down, he's averaging somewhere around like 35. There's 48 passes against Carolina at the time. Like this team was 100% following the Jim Everett train.
Yeah, like they were second because that back then they only had 28 teams. They were fucking DFL and running or 27 and running the ball. They literally couldn't run the ball and they started running three and four wide receivers like all the time and that's the thing with me as if you go back and you look at those Saints teams like. People give Carl Smith a lot of shit, and I'm not saying he was a great offensive coordinator, even good, but those Saints teams, man, they were limited. They won a division title where their leading running back didn't crack 600 yards. Like, you know, this idea that like if Carl Smith just would have called different plays, like it would have been better. Like, no, man, the Saints offense was limited. And the funny thing was by the time they fixed the passing game in 94-95, the defense was crap, you know? Just like you said, you put Jim Everett and Wesley Walls and Michael Haynes on those, you know, that's what they needed. They needed a quarterback to do one or two things in a playoff game. Bobby Hebert couldn't. But those teams were fun and they had Tyrone Hughes and that sort of thing. But it really fell apart like for Jim Everett, like the 96 Saints, it fell apart rapidly, Preston, which
I have to tell a story real quick because when I was a little kid, I burned the – so we had this awful pool that we never ended up using because we never cleaned it and it was disgusting. But we had a heater to it, which – why the hell does anybody need a pool heater in New Orleans? I think we turned that thing on like twice in my entire life. But anyway, so I'm like running through the sprinklers and all the stuff. And my dad's got a video camera and we're just having a gay old time, just running around in the yard. And I jump up on the heater and I burn the crap out of my feet. I think I had like second-degree burns. I go to the hospital, ask me who my nurse was.
Who was your nurse?
It was Tyrone Hughes's mom.
Wow.
So I got to go to like all this like cool stuff that Tyrone Hughes was doing, like all these press. I think I probably got his autograph like five or six times, but I can't remember which Rams matchup it was, where it was 37-34, where he had the two kickoff returns for touchdowns, and the Rams had that like rock me to sleep punt return for a touchdown, where it's just like,
yeah,
you
know, oh, yeah.
Touched the ball. But man, was he electric. Of course, like there was also like the fumbling and stuff, but I'm not sure if we've ever had like as dynamic a returner as Tyrone Hughes. And I mean that like in good and bad ways. Like for every like 60-yard kickoff return, he would also like fumble away a punt. So he was definitely like the highs and lows, but it was like such a wild 2-year ride to like have such an explosive offense and such an explosive special teams and just like have such a terrible defense.
Yeah, Tyrone Hughes had 92-yard kickoff return and a 98-yard kickoff return for touchdowns. Yeah, like they kicked to him again after he went 92 yards. It's the Rams are like, "Fuck it, we're kicking to you again."
They're like, "We can beat him again." It's just like the Vikings and Reggie Bush. Whenever they're like, "Yeah," the third time when they accidentally kicked to him again, and he almost had three punt returns for a touchdown. But man, like Tyrone Hughes was awesome. Anyway, we're getting off of Jim Everett, but. Man, 6'5", 210, like a cannon for an arm. And you said that, like, you know, Carl Smith was doing what he could with what he had, but I can't remember exactly what the numbers were. But I think in 91 and 92, the Saints, like, had historic numbers, like, holding their opponents to, like, 210 points on
the season. Oh, totally. The Saints' offenses, I mean, defense of 91, 92 were historic. The 91 defense, they were 210 and 201 points. I mean, it was – their defense was – they went basically like – I want to say in 91, the Saints went almost like 6 weeks without allowing a touchdown. Like it was crazy. And that's why it was so – it was so frustrating, because you saw Jim Everett and you were like, man, this slightly above average offense would have been awesome 4 years ago, you know?
Yeah, and then in 94, the Saints allow 30, 38, 9, 24, 27, 17, 36, 37, 21, 33, 24, 35, 31, 29, 24, and 30 points. Like, I don't know what that boils down to, probably like something like 350 points, but man, if we just would have had, I don't know, like
94, 407 points allowed, 27-28.
Oh my God. Know?
But I mean, that's the thing. Like Jim Everett, historically, he's like forgotten because the Saints were terrible. But clearly, if you rank Saints quarterbacks, look, Breeze would be one. And I'll fight people to the death, but Aaron Brooks is second best quarterback in Saints history. Don't fucking at me.
Oh, it's just the 2000. What was the movie? Any Given Sunday. I feel like Any Given Sunday like glorified Aaron Brooks to this pedestal, because he was living all of our Jamie Foxx fantasies by
really,
like coming
really
in. Just coming in and replacing Jeff Blake and leading us to. We had never won a playoff game, of course. So like we go and we beat St. Louis the very next week, his like first like official game starting after I think it was the Raiders, and then of course he wins that game 31-28. Hakeem drops the ball, and all of a sudden like that second he's immortalized. And you, Ralph, forget like the other 4 years of just like dropping back to pass and just like throwing the ball aimlessly behind him 10 yards while the defenders all like run under it. Like how many like mindless fumbles that were not caused did Aaron Brooks like create?
A lot. I mean, he fumbled a lot, but here's the thing. Like if you look at his career stats, like he's got, you know, he had year where he had 26, 27, 24 touchdowns. He had 24 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, 21-16. Like he frustrated us, but like when you put him up against every other quarterback at Saints history, he's good. And that's the thing with Jim Everett. Like you said, he had 2.5 good years and he shot up the charts, because basically Archie, we love him, and he's like, you know, the patron saint of like all the suffering and like old Saints fans have to believe he's good, because if they admit that Archie's terrible, then from 1970 to 1986, you basically rooted for a trash pile and Archie was all you had. And if you admit that he's not that good, then you admit that like a 15 years of your life was wasted on nothing. So I get that, like, old timers like cling to Archie because they have to. But, like, Archie never put up any good years. But you can argue that up and down. Go to Sports Illustrated, Google Paul Zimmerman. Blah, blah, blah. See, Preston? I'm drinking too much. Google Paul Zimmerman, Archie Manning. He has a feature on Archie, and it's amazing. But, yeah, I mean, Jim Everett, the reason why I brought up – I wanted to do him is just because it's just like a gateway to this, like, forgotten time of Saints where it's like between the Don't – you know, the Don't Patrol was over. The Ditka comedy show was yet to start. So we had this, like, murky middle of the decline of the Jim Mora years, which, you know, it's interesting. And the Saints had a lot of heartache in those games, the Morton Anderson 4 field goal game. You know, they also had a game – they were down 14-0. And they hadn't even touched the ball. Like, Atlanta scored, the Saints fumbled a kickoff. Atlanta scooped it up and scored, and the Saints were down 14-0. They came back to beat Atlanta. I remember I was at that game. I drove in from Baton Rouge, and I arrived late. I arrived like 3 minutes late. I sat down. I was like, what the fuck is this? They're down 14-0? And my mom was like, yeah, I don't know. They fumbled a kickoff or something, and Atlanta picked it up and ran it in. I'm like, there's 13 minutes and 45 seconds. How can you be down 14-0? It's impossible. But they were. Because they're the Saints.
I think it's just like a stark contrast. I think that was like the point in time when they realized they had to go in a different direction from Jim Mora, because like I said, defense had like carried them for so long, and they thought like, let's restart this. Let's try to keep up with the league and with the Cowboys and that three-headed monster, and with the 49ers and Steve Young and Jerry Rice and Ricky Waters, and let's try to develop our own like three-headed monster. And it just fell apart for them. And we'll have to do another like Drunk History Month on some of Jim Mora's most memorable quotes in 1996, because that was I think like to this day, I think if you like rank head coaches for like most YouTube worthy content, he still has
Jim Mora's
like,
first ballot hall. Like Jim Mora is pantheon of coach sound bites. I don't you could talk Super Bowl championships, whatever. Jim Mora is in the pantheon. He's got his best stuff. Isn't even people think of him a playoffs play that isn't even in his top five. Like just, if you rank, if you know all his Saints material, my God, the man, like I have to sit Preston. I'm gonna have to do it one day and just like edit all the clips, because you can't have that podcast show without me running the clips. So yeah. So I guess as we wrap up this Jim Everett history, I rank Jim Everett, I would say in Saints quarterback history, Breeze, Aaron Brooks, Bobby, Archie, Jim Everett, I would rank him fifth because he only had 2 years, but I would say Jim Everett's best years with the Saints are probably – he's probably – like if you rank Saints individual years, Jim Everett's 1995 season with the Saints would probably rank – after you rank the top eight of Breeze's years, you would probably put like one Aaron Brooks year and Jim Everett. So Jim Everett has like a top 10 Saints quarterback year, and he has a better year than Archie or Bobby ever had, which is weird to say because it's forgotten. But I would rank him. I'd probably rank him the fifth best quarterback in Saints history, fourth maybe if I'm really drunk right now and I hate Bobby Hebert because he caused me so much pain as a child. I rank him fourth. Fuck it, Preston. I say Jim Everett's the fourth best quarterback in Saints history.
And you have to be careful because Bobby Hebert and Jim Mora are still like prevalent members of the New Orleans media. And I think Jim Mora like just got caught cursing on live television. Just like, I don't remember. I think it was like back in December. He was like guesting into some New Orleans talk show. I think it was like WWE.
No, he does. Yeah, he does the post game for Channel 6, man.
And yeah, he got caught cursing.
He's great. Like they should put Jim Mora on the Monday Night Booth. Because Jim Moore's in his 80s and he does not give a fuck.
Dude, like, who's going to replace Jim Henderson?
He is past his bedtime for Monday Night Football present. So it would be really cranky. Like Jim Mora on Monday Night Football would be a star. Because 80-year-old men don't give a shit about anything. Like he'll just start cursing at players, start telling how bad they play. Like it would be awesome.
I definitely would love to see that. I also want to know, like, about Jim Henderson, who's going to replace him. I don't know if you know that, but what I wanted to say is, and this is like a whole nother conversation. I think like Jim Everett basically is like definitely the third best quarterback at that point in his career. After that, like Aaron Brooks and Drew Brees, you can definitely argue that he'd be top five, unless you want to argue for Danny Werfel, which is another fun topic to talk about. But let me ask you this, Ralph: if Jeff Blake comes back in 2001 and starts, rank him in your top five?
Probably. That's a good, see, that's another like whole drunk history. Like we need to do a drunk history of like what if scenarios for the Saints.
Dude, I still have all my 2000 like Saints Digest and my VHS real stuff. Dude, I was obsessed with Jeff Blake, and I just like, I remember that ensuing offseason. Like, I was a big Aaron Brooks fan and I loved what he did and I loved like the playoff victory. But I still like wholeheartedly was one of those people who was like, you should not lose your job due to injury. If you're 7-3 for a team that the year before was 3-13, you deserve another opportunity.
On Earth 2, that Saints team, Jeff Blake stayed healthy, Ricky Williams stayed healthy, and they won the ultra shitty NFC and went to the Super Bowl and got housed by Baltimore because Baltimore had the greatest defense of all time. Or maybe Baltimore played a bunch of shitty offenses and the Saints figured it out and did something crazy and won. But on Earth 2, the 2000 Saints at least went to the Super Bowl. And you can't prove me wrong.
Dude, is that a DC League Universe homage right
it
there?
It is. On your- See, that's how fucking drunk I am right now. I'm doing I'm just making up comic book stuff, which I don't even know about.
The Flash.
I mean, look, people, you paid for this. It went on. I can't tell for the drunk history if people enjoy it when we get factual or they enjoy it when we get off the rails like me and you did. We started with Jim Everett. We talked about the decline of Jim Mora. Then we went to the 2000 Saints. Then we looped back around and did the rankings of all time's quarterbacks. I don't know if people like it when we go off the rails or they're like, fuck, I can't believe I paid for this shit. But either way, we already have your money. So just listen to and enjoy it. It's the May episode. So quick prediction, Preston. The people will get this on the first day of May, May 1st. Oh, so when they get it, as an ending note of this, will the Pelicans still be in the NBA playoffs?
They absolutely will be in the NBA playoffs. And not only that, oh my God, you're going to play this back for me after all this transpires.
Yes.
I'm going to lose
my mind. I love it.
I think not only will the Pelicans be in it, but I think we will be sitting in a confident, advantageous position. Obviously, the Trailblazers like host this series. But with that being said, the Pelicans, if nothing else, will at that point in time have no fear of playing in the Moda Center. Whether it's 2-2 or 3-2 at the point that you hear this podcast, the Pelicans will, and I will guarantee this, they will have won a game in Portland, even if that like thereby means that Portland will also have won a game in New Orleans. But we will be confident. There will be a chance. There will be hope, even if the series has not been locked up by this. If Portland, you know what? I'll do one better, Ralph. What are you doing next Saturday? Let's go to a game, my man.
I'll fly in. So I'm holding you to this, Preston Mellis. I just called you Preston Mellis.
That's God, close enough. Well, you know what? My middle name starts with an M, so you're pretty close.
All right. Well, at least the people know that I don't fake it on this podcast. I always drink before we start. So that's a great guy, Preston. Thanks for joining us. It's been fun. I know it's really late in Orlando, but thanks, guy, for joining us. I appreciate it. People, this has been Drunk History. British lady, take us out.
Thanks to all of our Saints Happy Hour listeners whose donations made Drunk Saints History possible. Until next time, remember, surviving Saints history is hard. That's why God made alcohol.